Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to it. Once again, it's Black Life, and the time now is 11:04. My name is Demetra Masha, and I'm not traveling alone. I'm with Mr. Kitesh Sunderson. How are you doing, my man?
Hi, Demetra. I'm doing great.
I really hope that I didn't mess up the pronunciation of your name again.
No, Kitesh, don't worry.
Because, you know, I'm always trying to get it right, because it's so important that we, as the darker people, at least get to say our names properly, you know? Like, it's wrong for me to keep saying, like, say your name again. Can I just call you Keith?
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. So used to it already. I'm fine with it. No
what problem. Do you think of what happened earlier in the year when people were doing that whole thing where they were saying things like, if a white guy says, "Hi, my name is Keith," you're like, "Who? Keith? Who? Can I call you Xolisi?"
Yeah. I think it's
crazy.
Depends on your personality, man. It's crazy because you're going to stop everybody, whoever's going to address you, and you're going to have to come up with a new name for yourself.
Okay, here's the thing. The other day, I went to Deep Sluit. I don't know if you've ever been.
I haven't. I've driven past every other person.
I've also driven past, right?
And I've always looked.
Yeah.
Because as you drive past, you're curious, or whether you're concerned about security, or... The thing that fascinated me driving past was secondhand clothing being sold on the side.
On literally
little
on
piles,
the road.
Piles yeah. of clothes on the side of the road. So, so that gave me a lot of memories. I mean, that I remember in the old days we used to trade with old clothing. I don't know if you remember, where I lived, people used to come and they would sell these ornaments, and you could buy the ornament by giving old clothes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there was this thing that, and my mother always felt sorry for the person coming.
Okay.
So we would be giving away all our old clothes, used to go, and it used to be a pile of things for an ornament of some sort. And that's how we traded a lot of old clothes for. And there was also the other group which used to come with doilies. And I don't know if you know those crochet.
Yes, I remember those.
Tablecloths. My mother loved it. She
to
bought.
To this day, I am allergic to those things. I can't even look at them for 5 seconds.
Oh, well, I remember growing up with them. We had them everywhere.
I know. On top of the TV.
Correct.
And then you have a plant. On top of the TV, on top of the doily.
That's right, and we had those on the backs of couches,
yes.
And sometimes you got the ones with the little tassels where you could close up. If you had an open drink or something, you put it over.
Those were kind of cool, though. Yeah. Those were all right. But it's just the random doilies on furniture.
Absolutely. And then a time came, you know, when you had to get rid of it. We had so much, it was not even funny.
Okay.
I mean, I had boxes of
doilies,
crocheted items.
Yeah.
Literally. Because my mother kept trading, and she felt very sorry for the person coming and having to do this work, and they've made it, and she would buy.
Have you ever owned a crocheted item like that in your own home that you were paying, like whether you're paying rent or bond? Have you ever in your life?
No, I don't. I think I may have a memento somewhere, but in my own home with when I got married, my wife was not having it. I wasn't able to convert.
Oh,
that.
You thought about it though. you were okay with it? It's just my wife wasn't having it, but I'm okay with it.
It didn't even feature. I mean, when I left my father's house, I started sort of afresh, so I didn't have the baggage to take with me.
So you kind of moved out of your father's house, and then you and your wife.
Correct.
So you never had that whole experience of being a bachelor and having some of your parents' old things, like some of their old furniture and things like that?
No, I never did that. I was quite smart in those days.
Okay.
I knew where the food was, and that was at home. and I knew it was a lot easier if I didn't have to do any sort of cleaning, washing. I wasn't going to do any of that stuff.
Okay.
There was no way,
and
I sort of knew I could get away with it at home, and I had enough freedom to not get to the situation where I had to look for my own space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that helped.
Okay, well, I've never really, I can say I haven't lived at home as a grown up since I was probably 10.
Yeah,
I've never really lived at home, but the thought of having a doily, it was one of those things where I said, as a grown-up, I will never, ever, if there's one thing I won't have, is a doily and one of those little, like, Barbie doll sort of dolls with the cut off. I don't know if they had the legs were cut off. They're there,
yeah.
But with the tutu that covered the toilet paper.
Yes,
like the Barbie doll toilet paper holder.
I remember those. We had those too. They covered. They that's right. They sat on the top of the old fashioned toilet and they covered the toilet paper.
Yeah. And then there was that, you know, it was sewn. It was like a sewed piece of cloth. It was all frilly, that covered the cistern. I don't know why we needed cistern, you know. Fashion and accessories,
you know,
back in the day.
In a way, I think at some point we only got white, white bathroom products. And I think after that, things sort of changed, and you could get different shapes, and you could get you know, built-in units and all sorts of stuff. But I think up to that point,
it was like to differentiate.
Yeah. They also had the tissue box cover.
Yeah,
you know, which was also something that you could, you know.
To this day, I'm going back, and you know, at first I must say that was the one thing that I thought was pretty cool, especially the gold ones, the gold like aluminium ones. But now looking back,
people had them in their cars. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
there was a big trend of having them in the back window, and
I had tissues in the back window.
Okay,
in all my cars until. The 2000s.
And then wet wipes came.
Now I have those. I have wet wipes in my car. And that's okay. I'm not ashamed.
Right.
Rather have them and not need them than need them and not have them.
Correct. But I always wondered about that though, because if you were in the front, did you have to ask someone behind you to get you a tissue?
That's the thing, right? Or if you were by yourself.
How would you?
Like all the way back there.
Correct.
You had to stop, literally.
Took a bit of planning. You had to stop, out, get one.
And go get a tissue and come back. So, yeah. But anyway. So you were in Stellenbosch recently. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. I went down for a weekend and just enjoyed it. I did like it. But
was it a getaway or was it business?
No, it was a getaway. So this was purely social, staying there, going and experiencing what Stellenbosch has to offer. I mean, you know, it's one of those places that seems like it's in a different world. I think as soon as you fly over those mountains on the Western Cape, it's different. And you go to Stellenbosch and you experience a completely different lifestyle and you're getting a lot of food experiences and there's a lot of wine farms and you really feel as if you're living in a world that has parallel universes, because that's a complete different world to what we used to.
Although, I mean, the Stellenbosch experience is different if you went with just the wife or with the kids.
That's right.
So was it with the wife or with the wife?
No, this was with my wife and
you left the kids behind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we did.
So that means you had a chance to really go for those high-end restaurants. Really enjoy it, because with the kids, it's sort of like, well, you know, whichever restaurant we go to.
That's right.
They're still going to kind of get the same burger, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
And timing is the big thing when you're going without your kids, because then it's at leisure. You can really plan what you really want to do.
You can do what you want to do. You don't have to go
longer and you don't need to think about activities and a play area and how long you're going to be in a spot. But that's the difference.
Okay. So, I've been to Stellenbosch a number of times, and I always find, like you say, that the parallel universe of, am I still in South Africa? And I don't mean that in any negative sort of way, like the whole joke we always have about the Western Cape being an extension of the Mediterranean South.
Yes.
But in that, it's just the beauty, number one, of the natural landscape. Even, I say, the atmosphere and the weather, everything about it is so different to anywhere else that you can say is what you would expect South Africa to be, right?
Yes.
And then on top of that, the taste of the food. I mean, the taste of it is different. The same plate of food is different to what you have up here.
Well, the thing is, they've got so many restaurants and so many professional chefs that are out there now, and everyone's trying to be a little different. And the experience is really an amazing one. Let me tell you, the experience comes at a price, because I think if you're going there in the summer months when the Europeans are out here, then prices are higher. I think when it gets down to the rainy season and there aren't any foreign tourists, I think prices are lower.
But hang on a second. Is there ever a time when there aren't any foreign tourists or foreigners in Cape Town?
I think it's the height now. I think
it's the height of the tourism.
Exactly. So there's always tourism there, but I think as we get to the middle of the year, it gets a bit rainy. Mm. I think restaurants then have to coax you in.
So when were you there?
I was right here 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Right in
that was
one of the
end,
busiest periods.
Though. Was it the busiest period?
It's very busy. I mean, very busy. I mean, February is a great time for being.
But I thought that would be over, the whole tourist.
No, there was a lot of tourists there. I went to the waterfront, found it exceptionally busy, and then went to Stellenbosch, and I think when you're walking around, you literally hear the different accents coming through. You start noticing things that people from Johannesburg would notice, like somebody walking around with his camera attached to the front of him. And
but it's not because of safety that we don't carry our cameras attached to the front.
Exactly.
It's just silly. Like, you know, what are you going to take a picture of?
Exactly. So, but I mean, you can see tourists the way they dress.
You know,
when you travel, there's one thing, the way you dress. You spot, you know, travelers all over, and I'm the same. I mean, when you go, you have to be economical with what you carry, right? So, so what do? You take a hiking shoe, you take some kind of khaki pants that has many pockets in it. You know, you sort of got this this rain sort of multi
like that zip up jacket.
Exactly. So that it's multi weather, all purpose sort of jackets.
When it gets a bit cool, when it gets too hot, when it gets a bit rainy, that jacket.
So, and you're seeing a lot of people out there doing that, and then the restaurants are quite full. I mean, I tell you, I wanted to go to Ernie's, got a restaurant out there called the Big Easy.
Big Easy in Stellenbosch.
In Stellenbosch, mm-hmm. Great place. Tried to get in, and literally fully booked.
You have to book a month in advance.
Maybe not a month in advance, but you have to book. So you can't just decide in. I tried at 2 o'clock, thinking, well, I'm going to do tonight. Maybe, you know, dinner at this restaurant.
That sounds reasonable.
Exactly. Fully booked. So I think, and that didn't only apply to his one. There was another pizza place, an Italian place. We got there, and the guy said, we can fit you in 2.5 hours' time.
Wow.
And I said, it's now 6 o'clock. So you're saying 8:30 to 9, I should come back?
Yeah. What am I doing in the meantime?
Exactly. So
I mean, I'm hungry now. So in 2.5 hours, either I'd have eaten.
Correct.
So
I've been there different times. So I've been there during the week, and when you walk around, you can get in anywhere. It's during the week, but I think once you are heading towards the weekend,
you were there on the weekend.
I was there on a weekend, and that's very very. You know, it's been very busy.
It's never been great on a weekend.
I know.
It's very busy. There's no off season.
No,
on the weekend.
No off season on the weekend. But the experience is not just, you know, it's multifaceted, because it's the environment.
Yeah.
It's looking at a great view. It's a little bit of a street culture that we don't actually have in other places like that, where leave your car, walk on the street.
The thing with Joburg, I mean, you know, people bemoan the fact that we don't have a street culture. But imagine you parked your car in Morningside, right? And there was a street culture. And then we have to come all the way down to Rivonia.
Yeah. Yeah,
or we have to go to Rosebank. It would be a mission.
It would be a mission. I think it would be a mission. What's nice there, it's self-contained. And then, you know, what else I enjoyed is they have these lovely markets on a Saturday morning.
Okay.
And good food. Fruit, you know, you just, and you got some music, and literally people were buying food, sitting on the grass, and having a picnic.
Okay.
I think it's and on one side you have the view is of a mountain, and you have some vineyards, and on the other side you could have houses or golf estates so it's a beautiful setting just to sort of unplug yourself from.
You felt at peace.
I did.
You felt great about the world. It was like,
I did.
You know, everything's wonderful.
Everything's wonderful, but after a while, you know, you sort of realize that life is a lot more than just
really?
Sitting there. Yeah.
I don't know if I ever have that. You know what? I should go back and do something with my life again that's work related. I could do that.
I think you're getting a bit of a balance. I mean, you've got the techno park that's in Stellenbosch that is. I mean, a lot of technology is coming out of that area. So I think people have managed to. I think the economy is growing from a corporate and it's very busy. Have you ever tried to get into Stellenbosch in the morning?
No,
there's a lot of traffic.
Trying to get in, not get out.
Get in, and the evening get out. I think because there's a lot of corporate offices actually in there.
Yeah, I suppose there are.
It's sort of deceived. You know, it's very deceptive. Because you're walking around and you're looking at these little buildings that are not really big in terms of height, yeah. but there's a lot of banks are there, a lot of private banks, right? Are there, a lot of technology, yeah, companies are there. I think there's
a lot of technology companies are there, right?
There's a vibrant technology sector that's, okay, that's just taken off there.
So let's make those millions so I can move to Stellenbosch. You can stay up here though.
You know, I believe there's a world I don't know about. Now, I think we spoke early on,
yeah,
about Twitter and about Facebook and about... And there are industries out there that make their money off these platforms, and they sit in these places that we don't know where they are.
Yeah.
And their job is to find people who are trending a certain way, who, uh-huh, are finding where people are looking at, what they're searching, how to optimize getting products into the right social media platforms. And I get a sense there's these caves in Stellenbosch where somebody's sitting there, and all he's doing is literally, yeah, trying to market to an online customer base that you and I just don't know about. We think we go into a shop, buy an item, but that's this another sector that's
technology. There's somebody who made that happen.
Exactly.
Wow. We should get into that, because I'd really like to move to Stellenbosch, because my Deep Slurred experience was completely different. And I wasn't there for the weekend, but I was there on Friday, Saturday. In fact, on Friday, I was in Cosmo City.
Yeah.
And Monday and Wednesday, I was in Deep Slurred. And I must say, I didn't enjoy it quite as much as I suppose you enjoyed Stellenbosch.
But you were there it was a work related thing.
It was work related, but the work related thing was the fun part. But just the experience. It's one of those places that once you drive in, you immediately feel a sense of chaos. I mean, apart from the fact that you have all these taxis that are driving as if there's no other car on the road, but there's like a whole bunch of them at the same time.
Yeah.
So they don't care whether they're driving along and they just stop without indicating.
Right.
Or they decide to make a U-turn, or whatever they decide to do, they just do it while they're in Deep Slurred, right?
Did you feel wherever you were driving, you were literally making it up as you were driving along?
Oh, yeah.
Anything can happen.
And it wasn't up to me.
It wasn't up to
whatever
you.
Whatever happened.
You just had to react to whatever was happening.
That's right. That was the first thing. From both the other drivers and pedestrians in general, there's that sense of overcrowding, and I want to put this into context. I know that there are people who've been to Deep Slurred before.
Yes,
I live like literally, I suppose, in Deep Slurred Extension in Dame Fern Valley.
Yeah,
it's not that far. It's walking distance.
No, it's not. It's literally a few kilometers, and you're there.
It's probably like one of the first few times I've ever been to Deep Slurred, right?
Yes,
and it surprised me because, yes, I know what a township looks like, but this does not look like any other township that I've been to.
What's the difference?
I mean, maybe more like Alex, I suppose. Alex is more like that. The difference is just the fact that every other township that I've ever been to seems to have a sense of there was some sort of plan when they built it. This one, it was sort of like we'll just go along as we go along. We'll put that we'll put that row of houses there, and oh shucks, we ran out of sewage pipe. Okay, well then let's build over there.
Yes, you know. So it's an unplanned. It seems unplanned. And is it just a
it's
incident
a mishmash
where people literally just came, settled, and then worked it out afterwards?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It seems like it was one major squatter camp that then became built up.
That's right.
But
it's now a major place. I mean, if you look at it,
very major place.
I mean, if you look at that road, I've seen development there. The shopping centers come up. I've seen a few other buildings come up close by.
I mean, the shopping centers come up. There's, you know, I was at a sort of like a school. They have a little complex which has got a creche, a primary, yes, school, a little field. So that was amazing.
Right.
That was great. But just being around there in general, you know, there's it does remind me of Alex in the fact that you've got these half built roads that are just literally coming apart,
right,
on you. And that's not to say that all the other townships in South Africa are like amazing, because they're not. But this, in terms of the disparity between a place like Stellenbosch or even a place like Dainfern, where, yeah, I live, and Deep Slurred, it was so wide. The yeah, amount of space or the amount of people that had to occupy a small amount of space, when you realize that you know, there are lots and lots of people.
Yeah. I think Stellenbosch and all those places don't have to contend with the volume of people. And therefore, if you don't have that kind of... And you probably have... It's very structured, right? So it's literally planned and everything's manicured and there are obviously rules and everybody abides by them. And I think if you've got... a smaller population, that's maybe easy to do. I think Dipstoot is a different story. I think the population has just grown significantly.
The population is very big. There is a lot of unemployment.
Yeah. But there must be a street culture there. I mean, talking about street culture, there must be food stalls everywhere.
Look, there's
people
a huge...
must be walk because a lot of walking happens, and I find in those places you always then have little tuck shops and little spaza shops and integrated with perhaps even formalized business at some point.
There's the formalized businesses, I suppose, are the spaza shops that have become now a little bit bigger and owned by mostly the Pakistanis.
Okay.
Then the locals would have the smaller like shops that I wouldn't call it a shop. It's like just on the side of the street selling something sweets,
yes,
or something like
yes.
that.
Tire repairs or
car wash is a big thing. You know, with this, with the reason why we're there, it was an NGO which was doing a sort of enterprise development training program for the locals.
Yes.
And a lot of the young people there, it seems if you are a young man, you want to open a car wash.
Okay.
If you're doing something innovative, it's a car wash with a chisanyama.
Okay.
If you're a young woman, it's a
hair salon.
Not even.
Not even a hair salon?
If only.
Beauty business or something like that?
It's making gotas. Ever heard of those?
No.
Gotas are basically like a bunny chow.
Yes, yes.
It's a quarter loaf of bread. You take off the top, you put acha in there, you put chips, you slap chips.
Right.
You put in your processed meats like poloni, but you're like really...
Really processed meat.
You're really processed meat. Okay. Like you take ham and reprocess
it. Whatever you get left in there, it's going to go in there.
Exactly.
But that's the market. I mean, I expect food to be a big thing because there's a lot of people.
It's that
people
kind of food.
Immediately, street food would be the next thing to come up.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. You know, what struck me was, I guess all the young entrepreneurs are coming up with the same thing.
Yes.
As opposed to doing something different. Something innovative. But some of the guys that we spoke to, there were a couple that were coming up with something different. Someone wanted to come up with a different way of making pizza.
Okay.
Which I thought was really interesting. And
that's
bringing
nice.
Back cinemas to the township.
Yes.
Especially in Deep Sluit. There was one young lady who wanted to open a number of laundries and then have a dry cleaner because there's no dry cleaner in Deep Sluit.
Wow. Okay.
Which I was like, wow, there's no dry cleaner in Deep Sluit. I mean,
yes.
There's a dry cleaner in every township. What else was innovative? There were a couple of interesting things, you know.
Is there infrastructure to cater for these businesses, even if people wanted to open them there? Because that's the very next thing, is right. You need a bit of infrastructure. You need some roads. You need somebody to put up at least some kind of building.
The roads are there, to be honest with you. Although,
okay.
like I said, the roads are
chaotic.
Plus, they're very narrow. That's
okay.
what I found.
So getting in and out is going to take you a long time.
It's always going to take you a long time. And also, if there's any repairs that are needed on the road, they are not done. So those roads were made once and that was it.
Yeah, you got to deal with it from there on.
Got to deal with it from now on. In terms of the electricity, every day I was there, there was no electricity. There was no water in the bathrooms, which I found quite disturbing.
Yes.
At least I could go home.
It's right. You'd go home and you're not far away, so at least you couldn't do it. I mean, we when you're out of water in your own personal house, I mean, just for a couple of hours it's
crazy.
It's
right?
crazy. You won't survive too long with that.
Yeah, and I was like, how is this happening? But then there's water everywhere on the streets,
And it's literally, you know, couple of kilometers from what is Four Ways.
Literally,
and
well, not even
Danefern.
What is Four Ways. What is Danefern?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the same infrastructure that they put in for Danefern, they could have put in for Deep Sluit. And in fact, I'm surprised that there isn't better infrastructure in Deep Sluit because apparently, surely, in fact, some of the levies and rates that we're paying in Danefern should be going towards helping out in Deep Sluit, right?
Yes,
that's the whole purpose of those. two places being next to each other like that.
And you know what else is also quite surprising? And you've got that, right? And then you've got Dane Fern right next door. But then across the road on the other side, you've got the American school.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go into the American school, it's just a different league altogether.
Mm.
And the way it's set up is if you're sitting in the American school, you wouldn't see anything.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it's. I mean, I was there last weekend for a basketball game with my son.
Okay.
And
I've never been there, although I've been. I know where it is.
Yeah.
I almost bought a house very close to the American school.
I mean, I thought some of the other schools in Sandton were fantastic.
Yeah.
When you drive into the American school.
Yeah.
This is a different league. I mean, oh, this wow. is.
Are they still taking students? I mean, can tell
you
my daughter.
You know what it costs? I heard, I mean, I'm not a fair with the figures, but it's something like 25,000 US a year.
Oh, Lord. That's. You know, when you said 25,000, I was like, that's. No.
US.
When you said dollars.
Exactly.
Like, that's not doable.
As you drive in, there's a little golf driving range with bunkers and.
Say that again. 25,000.
25,000 US dollars. And it's across the road, right?
Jeepers! Yeah.
Yeah.
So even if the dollar was a 10.
Correct.
That's 250,000 rands a year.
That's right.
Ha! Yeah, okay.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But I mean, if you drive in there, the first thing you got to have, I mean, the security is tight. We expect that.
Yeah, the U.S.
School. But when you drive in, it's got these fantastic basketball courts. Golf is obviously they got a lot of land, so they've got this little golf course, mini one that's there, and then they've got other facilities, and it's just amazing. But I mean, I'm just saying, they literally are neighbors.
Yeah, with Deep Sweat they are.
Yeah,
but you know, America.
But Deep Sweat, surely, you know, if you look at it, it's got a lot of people from different parts of the world. So,
it does.
So isn't it a melting pot of really everybody? Because that's what the sense I get of Deep Sweat is that the people that stay there are literally from everywhere.
It does.
And it's not one particular group or two groups or three groups.
Look, it is quite SADC as opposed to like thinking of the whole of Africa. It's not quite like you have West Africans and Central Africans and Eastern Africans, and you know, no, it's mostly you might have some Malawians, some Tanzanians, some Zimbabweans, some Zambians, people from Botswana. I didn't speak to any people from Botswana, but that's about it, you know. And then the rest are from Limpopo, mostly Limpopo, I was going to say Nelspruit, but in Mpumalanga. So you have that mix. So it's. So I suppose because of that, then you'd have some Mozambicans there as well.
Correct.
And that's about it. So it's quite SADC.
Yes.
It's like a little SADC township north of Four Ways. And in that way, it's quite interesting. But the big thing, I think, in terms of business, is infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also, if you thought about it, access to computers, because what I found was people did not have access to the simple things like just an internet cafe. Seemed like it was a big deal in Deep Sweat. So if one were to build a whole number of internet cafes, it would be very helpful for the people there, because the things that we take for granted, like your kids can just go onto a laptop, right? Or a desktop.
Well, they have access to computers, and they have access to internet.
And their phones,
it's
or
an option.
Their tablets, whatever.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you and I take for granted in terms of, you need information, you want to register a business, just go on the website for CIPC.
Yes.
For these people, that information, what we think of as Google, which is at the tips of our fingers.
Exactly. It's accessible very easily.
Something that you have to get into a taxi, go to that internet cafe, that part of the township. Ask the person who works at the internet cafe, because chances are you might not have enough money.
Yes.
To actually get onto the computer or know how to search, right?
You raise a very interesting thing. I was talking to somebody who was doing was part of the registration process at university, and the reality what you just alluded to was right there with people from all over who come to university for the very first time, and you've got people on one side who have been using computers all their life and they know exactly how to register, to a person sitting right next to you who's looking at a screen that says, put in your name set up a password, and the person is stuck, really does not know how to get from, it's the first time they're doing this process.
Yeah, that's hectic.
And I was,
it's a young person as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. I was quite shocked at this, and they were saying no. And somebody I was talking to their kids obviously came from a good school, and the internet was part of their life.
Yeah.
And they ended up spending the rest of the day helping people just to get their name log on for university, and the university is now to make it easier. They try and shift you to an online platform rather than physically helping everybody.
Mm.
So here was the difference right there in registration, where somebody simply didn't know how to move from putting your name, perhaps not having all the other information that you and I take for granted, like street address and our emails and a contact number and all these other things that one just automatically assumes you have.
I suppose so. And you know, I think what's interesting about that, and an eye opener, and not something that should make people sad, but actually for me it's empowered me. I feel like there's something now I can do.
Yes,
we have, like, you know, my wife and I, she has an iPad 1, I have an iPad 2 that's been sitting there for like maybe a year and a half.
Yes.
We have no use for them, you know. Old laptops, things like that, that you and I might have and take for granted. Like, what are we going to do with them? We can't even give them away to our relatives.
Yes.
Because they'd be like, why are you giving me this thing? Like, what am I supposed to do with it? I've got my own stuff. In places like that, that's where they're needed. And that's Absolutely. Where people would really appreciate them. And like you say, we take that for granted. Just being able to put your name on a website and register. Whereas, because you can just do it on your phone anyway.
Correct.
Whereas in certain places, people don't even have access to smartphones.
They've never used it. And you need to be familiar. It's like the first time you touch the internet. I mean, it was daunting. Everyone else takes it for granted. There is this. And yes, the learning curve will be there. And you will leave it. But just remember, you're starting out with somebody who literally is very nervous. It's like the first time you bought anything on the internet.
Yeah.
You're sitting there with your credit card, and then you're looking, and in your mind is, I'm putting my most prized possession, my credit card number, in this thing, and I'm hoping that nobody else is going to steal my number, and I'm not going to get the thing that I've ordered.
That still happens to this day, by the way.
It does. But that first time when I had to put one in, you know, afterwards there was this buyer's remorse. You sat there, why did I do it? I should have just got in my car. I should have driven to the place, paid for it in cash.
Oh, the worst is if it was an American site. You're
correct.
Like, they'll never call me again. I'll just give them the money.
So I think that's the first experience everybody will have with something. But getting back to that computer thing, I met somebody really interesting whose job it is to take old computers from companies, refurbish them. And in some cases, companies can, for example, say, take all my old equipment. And then he would, for example, refurbish all and take a percentage. So say 40% we can give to charity, and the 60% you can keep and defray your costs with regards to that. And I found that's quite an interesting way of getting technology out there, because if you have old computers, I don't know about you, you tend to keep them. I don't know why. You know, when you change a computer that's working. No, but you also, it's human nature. You know, I've done it. You change a computer working or a laptop, you're not going to really use the old one. But if it's still working, you'll tend to put it on the top drawer somewhere that you may... It's like a cell phone, right?
I guess it's like, I may use this again.
Correct. I mean, I have two or three cell phones that are in my cupboard, and they're working. I don't really need them. I've got a new one. But something compels you to say, well, I'll just keep this for in case.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of technology out there that perhaps can be recycled, that we keep for in case. I mean, laptops, desktops now, people are changing the... I mean, literally, if you're in business, 3 years, the maximum you're going to use something.
3 years maximum.
And you are, because technology is moving. I mean, I upgraded to Windows 10. And all of a sudden, the printer was working, but the scanner wasn't.
Huh?
And you sort of check around and you realize, well, they've upgraded the printer software to go to, you know, to be compatible to Windows 10, but they haven't upgraded the scanner. So essentially now the unit, I'm going to have to upgrade the whole unit again, right?
Yeah.
So this happens all, and technology is moving at such a alarming rate or a pace that you are going to change these things. So I think there is room to perhaps collect up technology and make it available.
I suppose there is. No, you're completely right. Because remember, for us, what might be not so new to a user, a young person in Deep Sluit, is completely brand new.
Exactly.
And also, a lot of the young kids have to be bused to some other location, whether it's in it's town somewhere, to go into a computer course.
So yes.
It's more of a course than it is a lifestyle.
Yes.
They go onto the computers for an hour, for a lesson, or maybe two, and then they go back home. And then
right.
They see them for that week, I suppose, right? Or maybe they'll, yeah, so once
That's
a
it.
Week. Whereas for the rest of us, it's every other hour, we're just on this thing called a computer or a laptop or whatever.
Right.
In fact, so it gets to a point where sometimes we have three or four of these things. You know, you have two laptops and a desktop.
Correct.
So,
and it's become habit now, right? You put on your computer. If you've got nothing to do, you're searching some news site. You're doing something. You're not. I mean, I've never, you know, when I've had it in front of me on my desk, I just left it there for 3 hours and said, well, I'm not going to really look at it now. I'm just going to do something else. You tend to, by habit, start looking at your social media sites. You start looking at
exactly,
and it's become a way of life now to be able to get your news, to get information, whatever you're doing. Checking your bank account for one of the things that you could possibly do regularly if you're expecting a payment. Yeah, that's,
I mean,
that's
I find that I'm doing that a lot more on my smartphone nowadays, to the extent that that's why I don't even need a tablet anymore. I kind of think, what am I doing with a tablet these days? My tablet hasn't been used for nearly 2 years.
Yes.
You know, my laptop, I only use it if I'm doing something that I need to do on a laptop, because I don't have to write on my laptop anymore. I can still write on my phone if I need to write something.
Yeah.
I guess if I'm doing spreadsheets like Excel, if I'm doing something on PowerPoint, it is easier to do it on my laptop than to do it on my phone, but I can still do that.
Yeah.
On my phone if I need to.
If you need it. I think all the devices, I think, have access to almost anything now. Microsoft, whatever you actually
I can need. Even watch, you know, I watch films nowadays on my phone as well if I want to, because it's like,
so
it's
I haven't got down to that now. Yeah, I could do the odd YouTube clip something else.
Yeah,
I haven't watched the full feature. I think I would in a situation where we had rolling blackouts or load shedding, then all of a sudden the phone seems to be the next.
You know, device. I find that the best way to relax for me on a Friday night, what I like to do is I like to sit by myself in the lounge somewhere, let the wife have the TV all to herself, and listen to music, and then go onto a site called Genius where you can see the lyrics.
Okay.
And then at the same time, go on to Google and go into the history of especially old music, you know.
Right.
The other day I was doing ended up being up until like 3 a.m. because I just thought, let me listen to I got myself the best of Queen.
Right.
You know. And listening to one song, which is Under Pressure with David Bowie in it, now it takes you into Queen, for example, how they wrote that song, and then how David Bowie got involved, and then from there how they performed it live without him there, and then David Bowie's history. So before you know it, it's 2 hours and you've read the story of maybe just David Bowie on his own, and how he wrote his other songs.
Yes.
And Queen. And it just goes deeper and deeper and
deeper. So you got absorbed by the information just being provided, and you just kept going.
I just kept going. Before you know it, and then they're like, oh, it's similar. You know, you go into Bohemian Rhapsody,
yes,
and how that was written. And then it's similar to Led Zeppelin and Stairway to Heaven. And then you get into that now. And before you know it, it's 4 hours later. But you've just been absorbing information. That's all
right.
It is.
Right. Is there a secret passion of music somewhere?
Oh, there's definitely. You know, I love music. But I think more than anything, I'm passionate about history and information. I always say to my wife, like, I just like to read. I like to absorb all sorts of information. So
it's everything. So it's not just limited to music. It would be movies. It would be actors. It would be.
It would be, you know, I've got I'm on a mailing list for Life Hack.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of Life Hack.
No.
Life Hack is basically they send you stories, short stories, which are blogs, I suppose. And the other day it was a blog of become an expert. You know, they've got 15 slides that they show you about eggs, how to make them properly, the different types of chickens that make the different
types
of eggs.
Have you got spare time that we just don't know about that you're actually doing that? I mean, it takes something for someone to go.
I don't know what happens.
Go through the slides on how to make eggs 15 different ways or whatever.
What happens is I fall through a rabbit hole. You know, you open something and you're like, this is going to be quick because,
Hey,
it would be interesting to know the different ways of making eggs.
Look, then, I can understand.
And the perfect way to make a boiled egg,
yeah,
right? Do you know the perfect way? How many minutes?
No, I don't. It's literally when I've only made eggs a couple of times in terms of boiled eggs. And I must admit, it's one of those shoot in the dark things. I probably overdo it, and I make sure that it's been there for a long time when I've had to do it. But I must come back to this eggs thing because it's one of my pet gripes.
What?
Is sometimes, I don't mind going shopping. That's the one thing I do like.
Okay.
And perhaps it's from a childhood of being I used to tag along with my mother and we used to shop, and it was a great time. So I don't mind shopping.
Okay.
So I'm not a, I can walk around the shopping, the supermarket.
Mm-hmm. You're a modern man.
The one section that really, really gets me is the egg section.
Why?
Because have you seen the varieties that you can actually get?
Isn't there just basically jumbo, extra large?
Yeah, well, there's a size thing.
Types of eggs.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. No,
well,
crazy.
There's a size thing. Then all of a sudden you'll have free range. Then you'll have a pick and pay or store brand. Then you'll have something that's antibiotic free. Then all of a sudden you've got other ones or some brands that I know that where they don't wash the egg because they believe that so you get a dirty egg versus a clean egg. I mean, the theory of this is unbelievable.
Oh no, it's crazy.
You know,
if you go
to the organic market, then you get something else. And then I learned something new in a market once that you get a double egg.
Huh?
Yeah, an egg with two yolks, I think.
Oh wow!
So listen, I didn't go there, but I just looked at the sign and I thought, okay.
Like, what are you going to do with two yolks?
I think you just crack one egg and you've got.
And you got two eggs.
Yes, or something like that.
That makes no sense.
I don't.
Sounds a bit gimmicky.
But it is
there. Don't trust them.
It is there somewhere. I promise you.
So, all right.
So whenever I go, I always have to make the call home to find out which one is it that
we
buy.
Yeah.
And my chances are it wouldn't be there again.
You buy that.
And then I'm literally going on. Okay. And then they also label these things different colors, right? Then eventually I go on sort of a color. I think it was blue last time. And then the next time I come, I probably buy the one with the red label. Because eventually,
do you buy like any like when it comes to the egg color itself? Do you buy the white colored eggs or the egg colored eggshell eggs?
I have a tendency to like the egg colored eggs, or what I perceive to be egg colored eggs.
Yes,
I suppose if I lived in a different country, the egg might be a different color.
In America, there's actually a hen. There's the hen that produces the white eggs is an American hen.
Really?
Yes. That's why in American movies, right, you see these white eggs and you're like, wow, because everything on American movies is like
it's slightly different. I sort of had the picture that if you get that in South Africa, there could be a company out there bleaching this thing.
That's what I thought as
well.
You
know, they could be cleaning it or whatever they're doing, but apparently you're not supposed to.
Apparently it's the hen.
Right.
So, you know, going deeper into the site, I realized that you have different hens as well for different eggs, and these hens are from different countries. And the egg size as well is because of the country of origin where the egg or the actual chicken is from.
Yes.
There's so many different types of chickens. There's almost a different chicken for every type of country. Did you know that?
Well, I can imagine that. I mean, I don't know if you've traveled. I've traveled all over and chicken doesn't always look the same and the color ain't the same in Asia as it is in Europe.
This.
Yeah, no, I've seen it. I mean, the chicken can even be a different color.
Until I went on the egg site. And that's when I realized that we are just scratching
the surface
when it comes to eggs. We could go a
you
lot
see now I'm a different kind of person because there's some things that I just say it is what it is. The information's out there.
It's too much.
I
right?
just sort of need to know what I need to know. Fact that I don't know everything is actually bliss.
Okay.
Because I can naively go through the world without crowding my head with how it actually works or
exactly
doesn't work. So for me, I there's certain things I suppose of interest I'll go into. But then I also have this belief that you shouldn't know too many unnecessary things.
I'm kind of like that with you on that one because all it does is depress you, right? When you find out there's certain things that you didn't know about that other people knew about all along. For example, I try not to go too much on some of these financial websites.
Right.
Because first of all, they're very confusing, and then you realize that you've been scammed and everything all along, right? Like banks are scamming us. Like you may as well just take your money and put it under a mattress. You know, you really may as well do that. There's this whole thing at the moment where they're saying that chances that you are at least probably getting about 300 rands every month of your money just taken, and you don't know who's taking it and where and why, is very high.
It's a possibility. I think fraud is on the rise, especially financial fraud, all over the place. And I think fraud's being, I mean, we have got the security devices now that you know where you've got to send a message to your phone. And now the new thing is criminals are able to clone your SIM card.
How crazy is that?
And essentially get the message that you're supposed to get. But
how do they know which website you're on and what you're about to do right now? I mean, that's... these criminals, man, it's a full-time job.
Well, you know, a lot of it's got to do with common sense, I think. A lot of times, and this has happened to me, you sort of get complacent. You don't always type in the URL to the site you're actually wanting to go. And so what you do is you create favorites, or you create a link, or you, really? Or for example, you know, you get an email and it looks like it's from a reputable source, and you click the link to get there. Meanwhile, you're actually entering a completely different site, and you're putting in information that somebody's really just collecting, and once they've got that, then the next thing is to then get hold of what your mobile number is. But the chance of getting that is very easy nowadays, I think. I think because remember, mobile number has become almost like our identity, right?
Yes.
Because almost everywhere you go, you're getting a one-time PIN sent to a mobile number.
Yeah.
Most of us, when we get asked for information, and it happens to me when you drive into a parking lot or wherever, we have to sign in. Chances are you're going to put in your mobile number instead of a office number where someone can leave a message. So that number is out there. And there has to be some level of collusion, I think. There has to be a level of collusion where you can do this. I mean, especially when it comes to SIM card cloning and that kind of thing, there has to be some collusion.
But that's
somewhere.
The thing, right? Because SIM cards have to be recut.
That's right. But what happens is somebody clones your card. And that's why I'm saying there has to be a connection somewhere
A connection somewhere. And I think without... disparaging MTN in any way or tarnishing their brand.
I think it can happen with almost any network.
But why does it keep happening to them? It happened in Nigeria where they just got fined for their SIM cards being not recut. But now the issue is, how does someone, this cloning thing, right? It came about, and I'm sure it's happening in all the other networks anyway. But
A lot of it's unreported. People don't really want to stand up there and saying, "Well, I was defrauded, or I acted in a way where I should have really picked this up, and I did something really stupid by giving out my information."
And it's tough for the networks. You know?
And it can happen to you when you're not concentrating. For example, there's a new thing with some of the banks where if you use your credit card, they can, for example, verify the transaction by an immediate call to you, automated call. Oh. Right?
Yes, there was that.
Correct. And now sometimes you get this automated call. You're not sure whether the automated call from a regular financial issue is actually a real call, right? The first thing that struck my mind is the first time it happened to me is that, is this automated call real? Because I'm not talking to a person. And it's asking me to verify myself.
And you're not asking it questions.
It's asking me questions, right? Yeah. So it'd be a great source of trying to get information out of me.
That's clever.
So I think there's that kind of thing. I mean, and it's timing, eh? It's timing. Mm. For example, you know, at the end of a tax year, for example, you've submitted your return and then you get some notice from SARS, which you are expecting. The timing sort of worked. You just submitted your return. It normally happens sort of after a deadline.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden you think, oh, let me... Because remember, when SARS sends you a note, even if you did everything totally correctly, or you filled everything out, you still get that feeling like, there's a dreaded, like, what have I done wrong? Okay.
To this day, I'm still like...
It's one of those calls. Yeah. One of those emails that you get that you're like, let me check. I don't know what I did.
Even if they say we're going to pay you some money and they do, you're like, okay, don't spend it because they might want it back.
Correct. So I think in that time, people then use that as the perfect opportunity to try and get hold of you and say, well, we've been trying to pay and it's bounced back. Can you just verify your bank account details so we can make sure this payment happens? Absolutely. But it makes complete sense because you are expecting something to come in. And it sounds like something you should do. Verify my account. I'm getting money in.
And that happened to me, I think, last year, where someone sent me an email, and it was an SMS, and there was just something that seemed dodgy about it, and I didn't respond.
Yes. But that's a right response, not to respond. If you feel it isn't correct,
right?
Don't.
And I thought to myself, if really they want to get a hold of me, they'll try again.
Correct. There will be other ways.
Or they didn't.
Exactly.
But when they did again, it was for something totally different. And then I realized that other one was actually fraudulent.
Correct.
So what you're talking about actually it does happen.
I mean, I take it now that when things like that happen, I say, well, you've got all my details. You can get hold of me on my landline. You can get hold of me on my email. You can get hold of me another way. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
And let the process continue. Because it's, unless it's something life and death situation where you have to answer, I can delay it. And then I could be the instigator of the inquiry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then exactly. And follow it up.
Yeah.
Rather than be on the other side where you're not completely sure, right?
That's
so you're
doing
you're almost doing a test. You're calling back, you're checking, you know, you're doing other things to verify whether this is actually correct or not.
Mm. I mean, have you ever gotten an SMS from I don't know, Mr. Rogers or something, that you've won some competition for Omo?
Absolutely.
Or Nokia or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've won, I mean, last year I won probably over R1 million worth.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did call back.
And you did.
It was 750,000 on the table. Okay.
And what did you hear when you called back? What was the first thing that got you going? Because normally when you do it, the background doesn't quite fit.
Well, you know what? Actually, they were in a quiet area. It was a woman.
Okay.
It was a black woman from the accent that I could pick up.
Yes.
She was probably Sotho speaking, because I can tell.
Right.
And clearly she was working for these people, but she wanted some information, and before I gave it to her, I wanted some information. So where they got me, they said, you have the option of giving us your bank account details and we can do an EFT, or you can give us your name and we'll just send you a check.
Oh.
So I was like, I'll go for the check.
Of course.
Who wouldn't go for the check, right?
It's safer.
Yeah. Here's my name, TK Masha. Here's my address where you can send it, because I know that they're not going to get in at their estate. If they try to rob me that way.
You see, the trick is that you're divulging information about yourself that you because in reality
I really shouldn't, right?
You're not really sure, because I always ask myself the question is, what could someone do with that information? They could, for example, sell it to somebody else and say, well, I've collected this information, here's the thing. And so I'm always wary. You always got to watch.
I was wary myself. Yeah. But I was like, let me see if I'm going to get this check. To this day, I'm still waiting for that check, because
it's not going to come.
It would have been very helpful.
Absolutely. I've tried once or twice when I've literally been in the mood to just see what I've getting, and then you sort of listen to the background, and then you can hear something falling, and it's like, it sounds like an industrial park, or
really?
Or it's and I'm like, okay, is that an office? What was that I just heard now? What was that? And it's generally some background noise or somebody speaking in a foreign language somewhere.
You see,
and you're realizing, wait a second,
come on, man,
you know.
I wish they would just, like, be honest just once. And I think they would scam a few more people.
You know what? But it also affects legitimate people too, right? This thing.
Yeah.
Is that we always got our backs up when we get a call. I got a call from somebody who legitimately offered a service.
Oh, okay.
But,
like, what kind of service?
But, I mean, I think he was...
As we wrap up.
He was doing some employee stuff. But the problem is his background didn't match himself. So he had all this commotion going on behind him that I doubted whether he was actually the person offering the service. So it's often it worked in a different way.
Oh, okay.
Here was a legal person who you were doing a business call to, and then all of a sudden he had this background noise. So it's important because in my ears I'm like, are you a real business?
Yeah.
Am I hearing, you know, like Xbox or something in the background there? It doesn't
make
sense.
Yeah, a baby crying.
Exactly. What is going on? So it works. Yeah. It works both ways, though.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we're out of here. Have a great week. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on Cliff Central. This is Tamisha Masha and
Kitesh. And goodbye. Have a good day.
See you next time, guys. Bye bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.